All right, welcome to the Takes of the Game podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Young. On the other line, we've got Eshan Nath, who's a little bit sad about Stanford football, Jimmy Butler, and the Cubs. But he did have a big Mitch Trubisky weekend, so hopefully that made you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
All right, so we know it's been a couple weeks, but we wanted to come back and recap some news in the NBA and preview a couple things for the upcoming season. But first and foremost, Eshan's hero, Jimmy Butler, recently requested a trade from the Minnesota Timberwolves, which was not completely shocking, but also the timing of it coming so late in the summer and right before training camp was pretty odd. So, Eshan, you want to unpack your feelings initially and how you're feeling now about this whole Jimmy Butler Bulls part two in the form of the Timberwolves saga?
All right. So I'll try not to ramble for 20 minutes, but I mean, I guess you could say the headline is like Jimmy Butler is obviously my dude, but it's possible to think that your friends are acting like idiots sometimes. And I think it's also possible to think your favorite basketball players are acting silly sometimes. That being said, I think there's a lot more to this situation than initially meets the eye, and I'll get into that in a minute. But first, I just want to start at the beginning about Jimmy Butler being my dude. Obviously, he's getting a lot of negative attention right now, much of which is well-earned. So let's just try to remember back into 2011, the days when Eshan became a diehard, lifelong Jimmy Butler fan. So it all started actually the week before the NBA draft. I had no idea who Jimmy Butler was. And then I read this ESPN story by Chad Ford about Jimmy Butler's life. Here it is. I have it up from June 18th, 2011. It starts off with what Jimmy Butler's mom said to him when he was 13 years old. "I don't like the look of you. You gotta go." Those are the last words Jimmy Butler says he remembers his mother saying to him, according to his recollection, before she kicked him to the curb. He was 13 years old. There's no family to run to, no place to call home, no money in his pocket. Most kids his age are concerned with school, sports, girls. Butler is just trying to survive alone. And then the story goes on. It tells his life story. You know, there's a lot going on there basketball-wise, too. He was the 76th ranked recruit in the state of Texas as a senior of high school. Not nationally, 76th in the state of Texas. He had basically no D1 offers. He played junior college ball for a couple of years near near Houston before he got picked up by Marquette. And then at the end of 4 years there, he's the 30th pick in the first round of the draft. So definitely not your standard path five-star recruit to NBA superstar. And then I'm just going to read you another quote from this article. "Please, I know you're going to write something. I'm just asking you, don't write it in a way that makes people feel sorry for me. I hate that. There's nothing to feel sorry about. I love what happened to me. It made me who I am. I'm grateful for the challenges I faced. Please, don't make them feel sorry for me." So here's 21-year-old Eshan in college reading this story. She's like, "Oh my gosh, this guy's my dude. I need the Bulls to draft Jimmy Butler." So then I'm watching on draft night, and for basically the only time in the last 20 years, I guess there's one other time. I also really wanted them to draft Doug McDermott. It just didn't work out as well. Basically, the only time that the Bulls actually, you know, David Stern actually says the name of the guy I desperately wanted the Bulls to draft. And then all his rookie year, he basically gets no playing time. He's behind a lot of other talented wings. The Bulls have Dang and Ronnie Brewer and Kyle Korver. And the whole season, I was just like, guys, Jimmy Butler, wait till you see Jimmy Butler. He's going to, like, be a really good player in the future. But my expectations were, like, that Jimmy Butler would be the next Ronnie Brewer, basically. You know, really good, tough defensive player. So then basically the next season, when Dang is hurt, Jimmy gets some playing time later in the year. And then going into the playoffs, this is 2012 now, the Bulls have this completely depleted roster. Everyone's injured. And Jimmy sets an NBA record by playing all 48 minutes in like five straight playoff games or something. And the Bulls have this dramatic comeback win over the Brooklyn Nets in game seven without like basically three quarters of their team. Marcus Teague, who now doesn't even start in the G League, was their sixth man. Basically, their whole team was hurt. Nate Robinson and Bellinelli were like throwing up on the bench. There was like a flu going around. Joakim Noah was like the leader of the team, playing on one foot. DJ Augustine was like I guess DJ Augustine was the next year. Anyway, this super, super underdog story. They win a series. They win game one in Miami. Jimmy's like quickly turning into their best player. Then he's kind of like a really good role player at the time for another season or so. They lose to the Wizards in the playoffs the next year. And then the next season, Jimmy makes like a real leap over the summer, going from a defensive player, role player kind of guy to a main player on offense by the way it was reported, working out three times a day, basically like shutting himself off from all media for the summer to get better at basketball, and makes probably by many of these kind of one-size-fits-all statistics, potentially the biggest improvement from year to year, controlling for number of minutes in the history of the NBA. So he's most improved player the following season after being really, he really in one season went from like bench role player, seventh best guy in a good team to like legitimate all-star. And I remember, because that was my first year of the PhD here, I remember showing up here, my advisor's a big Bulls fan, and I was like, I've been watching Jimmy over the summer. I've seen some highlight videos. I watched a couple of preseason games. I'm telling you, Jimmy's going to be an all-star this year. And it was like such a crazy thing to say that literally my advisor looked at me and was like, Ishan, sometimes I wonder why we let you into this PhD program. And then, of course, Jimmy was an all-star that year. So, you know, there's a long history, starting with me reading this story about this homeless 13-year-old who wasn't recruited to play Division I basketball, to now NBA superstar who can have this kind of power over an entire franchise. So, like, my love for Jimmy Butler is deep and meaningful to me, and it's not like this story is changing that, but obviously it's super annoying to me that he's demanded a trade. I was really looking forward to the Timberwolves without Jamal Crawford, the lineup data, like basically just stink bomb. Like any lineup is ruined by Jamal Crawford. He's like gone from Minnesota. They have some really good bench players that I really like this year. I was excited about watching Jimmy and Lou together, as my new Twitter account shows. And this is just kind of a disaster for all that. But before we get deep into that, I just want to say one thing that I think is annoying to me about the way this Jimmy trade demand situation is being reported, which is basically that there's really credible reporting by the two people who, in my estimation, probably are the most likely to know what's going on out of anybody, which are Shams Charania, the really well-sourced reporter who, he's at The Athletic now, right? Yeah. Anyway, him and Darren Wolfson, the local, I think he's like the TV, I can't remember what outlet he writes for in Minnesota, maybe the Star Tribune. I should probably know that. Anyway, he's like one of the main beat writers for the Timberwolves. Both Shams and Darren Wolfson reported that Karl Anthony Towns made a demand of the Timberwolves that he would not sign any contract unless they traded Jimmy Butler, and that basically what Jimmy said was like, F this, I'm not going to, obviously, you know, Towns is 7 years younger than Butler, so obviously the Timberwolves are going to pick Towns over Jimmy. And so basically the way that these two well-sourced reporters are telling the story, it's like Towns made this demand. The Timberwolves were obviously going to have to pick Towns over Butler just for age reasons and probably basketball reasons too eventually, although I think that's debatable. Basketball, not age. And so then Jimmy was basically like, well, I'm not going to get embarrassed by this franchise choosing Towns over me. And I'm not going to let like Towns push me out the door. I'm going to be the one that demands a trade. I'm going to put that out there. And so that's, you know, obviously there's other reasons he wanted to leave, but this is like a two-person demanding Jimmy out of Minnesota situation. So I just think it's wild that like, it's totally unreported that Towns demanded a Butler trade before Butler demanded a Butler trade. I mean, obviously Jimmy wants it that way, it sounds like. So maybe that's part of why it's underreported. His side's playing that part of the story down. But whatever, something happened in Minnesota. You know, there's all these Twitter theories going around about Jimmy and Towns and like a fight over a girl. And like, I honestly find that fairly credible because like, it was obviously they didn't get along super well, Jimmy, Towns, and Wiggins, but like he was definitely not trying to demand a trade at the end of the season. And if he was going to demand a trade for reasons that were known at the end of the season, he would have done it in June. Like everyone, including Jimmy and his people, know that that's the time when you request trades. And so I think that like something happened over the summer. There's a lot of, like I said, Twitter kind of dark web conspiracy theories about it. Dark web's not the term I was looking for. Deep web, deep state, something like that. One of these conspiracy theory slang terms, theories going around. So I think something happened. Towns told the Timberwolves basically late in the summer, like August, it sounds like, when the extension talks were really ramping up, look, I'm not signing unless you trade Jimmy. And Jimmy was basically just exploded, it seems like. And it was like, F Towns, that dude doesn't play defense, he's lazy, which was true for a lot of last season. Like, F all these kids who don't care about winning and don't care about playing hard. They're like, if they're going to demand I'm out of here, I'm going to demand that first and like, get me out of here now. So that's kind of like my reconstruction of roughly what's going on. As to the teams he put on his list, I think my read of the reporting there is that like pretty clearly his list was teams that are going to have the financial situation to be able to commit to re-signing him to a max next summer. And he was basically like, these are three teams that definitely will do that. And if you can find other teams that'll re-sign me to a max, then that's cool too. Because initially I was pissed off about the teams that he put on his list, but it seems like the financial explanation is the main one there, and that actually his list is pretty fluid as long as someone's willing to offer him the max next summer.
Yeah, I think the list was funny, definitely, because like Jimmy Butler is somebody who, you know, I think he talks a lot about how he values, you know, extremely hard work. And, you know, I've read a lot of the feature stories, the Mina Kimes had story from a few years ago, basically talking about if the Bulls were going to give him the Supermax contract. It was a pretty famous profile about him, along with the one that you mentioned before he was drafted. And he's an extremely hard worker. He can almost be like alienating, I think, in his hard work of people. And I guess
very much like Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah. And I guess one of my qualms with Jimmy Butler is, so he has now, you know, I think the Bulls chemistry issues from an outside observer, well, obviously we're all outside observers, but not a Bulls fan, were way deeper than just Jimmy Butler. But, you know, there was first the chemistry issues or relationship issues with him and Derrick Rose, which Derrick Rose still wanted to be an alpha after having multiple serious knee injuries and off the court issues. And then there were personality issues where I think Butler and Wade kind of teamed up and maybe alienated the other players on the Bulls. And now it seems like Jimmy Butler has alienated or not gotten along with Towns and Wiggins. He sort of seems to me like he is that guy in your group of friends in middle school and high school who's always friends with the older guys and friends with the older crowd, but he doesn't realize that, you know, he at times is just as immature as the people that he doesn't like. And, you know, I know he's palling around with Pau Gasol in Europe this summer. And I just think that
it's,
I know,
so hilarious that Pau and D Wade are literally the two laziest Bulls that have played for their team since I've watched their franchise, basically. And like, those are the guys that Jimmy respects when it's supposed to be about hard work.
Yeah. And that's why I think like he sort of bugs me from his mantra perspective, is just like he'll sort of turn on these guys like Towns and Wiggins, and maybe that's because he feels threatened by them, but then he pals around with Pau Gasol and Dwayne Wade, who, yes, they're both future Hall of Famers and probably worked extremely hard at various points in their career, but the last 5 years, they're not beacons of grit and determination. And so I just think like there's some mixed messages that come from Jimmy Butler. And it's just curious to me that now kind of two situations in a row, for whatever reason, he's not able to get along with younger players. And I'm wondering if that is why you didn't see teams like the Lakers or the Celtics or the Sixers on his list, because one, he wants to be the guy. He wants a max contract. That's understandable. I don't know if Jimmy Butler ever could be the best player on a championship team. I would say he couldn't be.
I would say he could be. But barely. Like, I think that, like, Jimmy Butler at his peak has been, like, the fifth or sixth best guy in the NBA. And I think it takes a pretty special franchise to have the fifth or sixth best guy be the best player on a championship team. And also, he's never had a full season where he's been the fifth or sixth best guy. He's had, like, 3-month stretches.
Yeah. So I guess where I'm getting with that is he has mixed messages. He doesn't seem to get along with young players. So but he also really values hard work and toughing it out and sort of this Thibodeau model. But I guess I don't really know what he wants. Does he want to grind it out and win a championship, or does he want just a locker room where he's clearly the alpha, where people will fall in line? And is that part of the reason he's demanding these places that don't currently have a star, just because he would rather go to a franchise?
I think that's because he still thinks he's going to recruit Kyrie to those teams, or like another star, which I think is silly. One of the islands I'm on later, which we'll get to actually, is about free agency next year. But no, I think he definitely wants other stars on his team. That's not my read of the situation. Also, one quick thing on... wait, what was the other thing I was going to say? Wait, you should keep talking. I forgot what else I was going to say.
Well, I was just going to ask... So it does seem like, despite the power struggle going on between Tibbs and the Wolves ownership, that he will be traded at some point this season. I would say that's probably pretty inevitable, especially if, you know, he holds out Le'Veon Bell style. But... what teams that the five teams that he's been linked to thus far, the Rockets, the Heat, Clippers, Nets, and who's the other?
I don't know.
Knicks. Bucks. Sorry. And the Knicks. What, which one of those do you get excited as a Jimmy Butler fan, both playing style and just thinking like, oh, I could actually really see him succeeding on this team?
Can I just say, I just want to say one thing about the young players thing real quick. I actually don't read it as young players so much. I agree there's a huge double standard between the vets and the young players. But it's also worth noting that there was like a stark divide in both cities with the young players he didn't get along with. So, I'm trying to remember which the young guys were on the 2015 Bulls roster. Let me just Google it real quick. But I remember that it was like a subset of the young guys he didn't get along with. And he actually got along really well with Doug McDermott and Nico Mirotic, who I guess met his like work ethic bar. Okay, here's the Bulls roster I'm looking at. So if I remember correctly, it was like mainly Jerry and Grant who he didn't get along with. Okay, maybe I have the wrong Bulls here. Hold on.
So it would have been...
16-17?
2017, yeah, because last year was his first year on the Timberwolves.
Yeah, okay, so I'm looking at the roster right now, and who did Jimmy not get along with? I remember Jerian Grant and Jerian Grant and Denzel Valentine were the two guys who Jimmy had trouble getting along with on that team. And then, like, on the Jimmy side of the locker room were Doug and Nico, and I can't remember, and of course D-Wade. I'm talking about just the young guys. And I can't remember which side of the locker room Bobby Portis was on. As you know, I can't stand Bobby Portis. But yeah, so I'm basically what I'm saying here is like, it's kind of like Doug and Nico were with Jimmy and Grant and Valentine were against Jimmy. And speaking as a Bulls fan, I'd like to add that Jerian Grant is basically out of the NBA now. And Denzel Valentine is awful. He's like... doesn't move on defense, thinks he's a star, gave another interview last week about how he's a high level NBA starter when he's like barely a usable NBA bench wing. I don't think Denzel Valentine could play 5 minutes in a playoff game without getting exposed. And then on the Timberwolves, you know, on the one hand, there's Wiggins and Towns are basically the two guys Jimmy didn't get along with, but they're not the only young players on the Timberwolves. There's also Tyus Jones. And is there any other young players? I guess Bielitsa, he's not really that young. And so I guess what I'm trying to say here is that, like, having watched the games of, like, literally I've probably watched, like, all but 5 games Jimmy Butler's played in his NBA career. The young players he didn't get along with are the same young players that, like, insanely pissed me off. And the young players that seem like they're working hard to me are the ones who like Tyus Jones, who I adore, are the guys who like didn't have a problem with Jimmy. So I think the double standard is more that the young players who are lazy get called out and the stars who are lazy don't get called out, like Powell and Wade. But I think if he's on a team with young players that are like, they don't even have to be good. They just have to be like Doug McDermott, or like, you know, we can debate how good Tyus Jones is, but he's definitely not a star. They just need to be young players who are like clearly care.
Yeah. And I think what's hard is like, I mean, I know Karl Anthony Towns has not played good defense over the course of his career, but, and he oddly has not really gotten better. He's honestly gotten worse, but he's not somebody like I buy at lazy. Like, he's improved his shooting. He's improved, like, he's gotten in so much better shape. I mean, last year would have technically been his senior year of college. And, you know, he's in a lot of ways exactly what you would like and respect from your franchise cornerstone. He's incredibly active in the community, seems like a really good guy, super active for social justice. You know, he's played in 82 games all 3 years. He started 82 games, and his three-point shooting has improved every single year. His free throws have improved every year. So it's just interesting that for some reason they couldn't make it work. And I have a couple just spitball thoughts on the Timberwolves. One, I think they rushed their timeline, and I think that is the biggest reason that this probably didn't work out. I think when you are a young team in the NBA, adding an alpha veteran to two extremely young, potentially budding all-stars is probably not the way to go. I think where veterans typically fit in on young teams like the Timberwolves or like the Sixers is in roles like JJ Redick on Philadelphia now, where they're not the star player, but they're just kind of that background voice in the locker room. And when they can sort of be patient with the team as they grow. And I think when you add Jimmy Butler into the Wolves equation, you know, they stumbled in their first year with Tibbs, and then you add Jimmy Butler, and it's like all of a sudden people are like, you know, people didn't know how good the Rockets were going to be last year. People are thinking, you know, are the Timberwolves potentially a team that can go to the Western Conference Finals? And I think they rushed their timeline. I think that put way too much pressure on Wiggins, his career might have already been floundering. And I also just think we are consistently seeing that the coach GM is just a bad move in the NBA. And I think this Tom Thibodeau and Doc Rivers eras, once they end, I don't know he got fired. But I don't think that we're gonna see.
Wait, he got fired as GM. He's still a coach.
No, right? Dwayne Casey's the coach of the Pistons now.
Oh, my bad.
But yeah, I don't think we're gonna see coach GMs in the NBA anymore. I mean, technically Pop, well, at the end of the day, is the GM of the Spurs. I mean, he's president of basketball operations, so he's one post higher than RC Buford. But I think that they rushed their timeline, and you need some sort of checks and balances, because Tibbs was doing two jobs, and I liked those Bulls teams. I thought they were fun, but he really tried to run back something that hadn't worked previously with, you know, adding two young players who really should have been that organization's focus into the fold. So
I sort of philosophically agree and practically disagree with this, in the sense that, like, I think you've made like a reasonable general case. I just think that at the time of the trade, the upgrade in overall talent was enormous, and that the young core the Timberwolves were building is enormously overrated. I think that Wiggins is like not a top 100 player in the NBA right now, and that like he doesn't look to me
Top 100 is ridiculous. If you look at the list that ESPN just put out of the top 100 players, and you look in the like 60s through 100s, there are some just absolute.
Look, it depends how you do. It depends how you define good. Let me explain that a little bit more. Wiggins only has star skills. He doesn't have any role player skills, and he's not good enough at star skills to be even like a fringe star. So like when you put Wiggins on a team with other good players, he's like kind of lost on defense, is like working hard, not that good right now. Basically has athleticism that he's not using very well. And then on offense, all he does is like super inefficient ISOs. He's terrible at catch and shoot. At least he was last season. And he doesn't really move off the ball very much. And so it's basically like the only thing he contributes to an offense are ISOs that are actually like kind of bad ISOs. So I feel like Wiggins obviously is like top 30 in the league in talent. But if you're talking about like actual impact on a team, he's like two levels below OG Anunoby in terms of like impact on a playoff game with, you know, other good players on his team right now. Because he's like not going to hit the open shot. He's not very good off the ball. And he's not good enough on the ball to be a star with the ball. And then his defense is kind of just all over the place. So I feel like Wiggins, and he's a max player. He's like eating up. I'm going to go so far as to say that it's almost impossible to build a playoff team around Wiggins on a max contract over the next 5 years. And I don't think the Timberwolves are going to do it. I don't think they make the playoffs in the post-Butler era on this Wiggins contract. That's a possible island, I guess. And then, yeah, and we've talked about this before. Like, Chris Dunn projects right now, Chris Dunn's like the 25th, 30th best starting point guard in the NBA, and he's 25 years old. So, like, at best, I think he projects as a fringe. Maybe he can get close to being a top 10 point guard if his defense is really game changing and his offense can get somewhere close to average. And then we've talked about how terrible I think the LaVine contract is, and someone is going to pay him that contract. So the Timberwolves are either losing LaVine in a year or overpaying him wildly. And then the average seventh pick in a draft is like not that good a player. It turns out actually that the seventh pick in last year's draft in Lauri Markkanen, I think, is actually a potential star. So I think looking back, I think that they gave up a lot because I think they gave up one potential star. But at the time, it was basically like they gave up two guys who I think are super overrated and are about to be both on terrible contracts, and a seventh pick in a draft that's usually not very valuable. So I kind of feel like the young core they were building was that. And the other thing about young cores, this is kind of a philosophical point, I guess, is that they all are going to get paid at the same time. And at that point, you're going to be a capped out team with whatever those young guys turned into. And the sunk cost fallacy is going to cause a lot of teams to overpay them.
And I do think that one, you know, I think that the trade, when they made it, it looked like just face value, this is a great trade. Like, you're trading Zach LaVine, who's probably hit his ceiling and ultimately takes the ball away from Wiggins and Towns a lot. The pick and Chris Dunn for Jimmy Butler. Like, why not do that trade? I just think I would almost even say, like, before that, going back to just the hiring of Tibbs in general, I don't think he was the right coach for that type of team. Like, Tibbs is somebody who
I disagree. I think if those players didn't learn, I just don't think. I think it makes me. I see your point. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you want to keep going?
No, I just think like Tibbs is the type of coach I want if I am like, you know, looking at a team like the Dallas Mavericks, who couldn't get over the hump with Dirk, and they have like these veterans, and they have maybe one star. And he can come in and like teach them a very specific thing. And that's like how to finish and how to play defense and, you know, to actually like adopt a system for maybe a team that hasn't been able to go like get over the hump. But I just don't know if I like really associate him with like player development and young guys and just like getting better. You know,
I interject for a second?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say I would have like much rather them like one, hire an unheard of person, or hire someone like Jeff Van Gundy, who you probably isn't going to lead you to a championship, but is just going to, his only focus is going to be developing those players and making them better.
So when Tibbs took over as coach of the Bulls in 2011, Derrick Rose was 21 years old. Joakim Noah had played two seasons. Jimmy Butler was minus 1 year into the league because he showed up in Chicago in Tibbs' second year. Luol Deng was like mid-20s or something. I don't remember exactly how old he was. Maybe like 26, 26. And he was kind of like the old guard. And like Derrick and Joakim and Jimmy grew up with Tibbs and went from like basically rookies to like the eventual stars they became entirely under Tibbs's guidance. So I view it more as a fit with a particular, I don't think it's about young versus not young players. I think honestly, and you like, this is not a commonly held view. I just think that the young players on the Timberwolves are a problem in the sense that like, I watched them play 80 times last year and I was like super annoyed with them like consistently the entire season. And so basically my view is that like Tibbs has proven with multiple guys who are a year or two into the league in Chicago that like he can groom and mold the young players into being, and like Tyus Jones is an example of a guy who's really blossomed in Minnesota since Tibbs showed up. And I just think that obviously Tibbs is going to get fired at some point. They're going to move on. And I just think that what the takeaway for me here is that, you know, Towns maybe to a lesser extent, because I think he's 1 year less in the league and like he's shown way more upside than Wiggins in so many different ways. And importantly, like Towns seems more annoyed about the things he messes up. Like he's terrible on defense last year, but he really like took it personally. And he didn't really improve that much, but like I could see Towns improving. I just think Wiggins is a lost cause. I think Wiggins is like gonna continue dribbling into contested 19 footers with 16 on the shot clock in his like ISOs and like float and not move off the ball. And I just think Wiggins is like,
if I was a team who like the Spurs. And I probably agree that in the wrong situation, I don't think Wiggins recovers. One, he's 23, but if the Spurs have a terrible season this year, I would be totally down with the Spurs trading for him and getting the last 2 years of his contract and seeing if they could.
If it's the last 2 years,
I think like,
I mean, the problem is he's got 4 years. He's got 5 years left on his contract. It starts this year, I think.
Oh, it starts
this
year?
Pretty sure he signed. Yeah,
that's right.
That contract is just a disaster.
So, all right, let's talk about
one thing first. You asked what team I want Jimmy to get traded to. The answer is obviously the Raptors, so we can trade for our, so we can watch our former favorite players try to win a title together.
That would be, it'd be interesting to see what the Raptors would have to give up. I mean, I would think that, you know, if they weren't willing to give up OG and you know, some of the other young pieces, can't think tonight, some of the other young pieces for Kawhi, that they probably wouldn't do it for Jimmy.
It depends how they value DeMar. Like in my view, if they gave up any one of Van Vliet, OG and Siakam, that would be a better deal than what the Spurs got, just because DeMar's like a mid-career player without much upside in my view, and I think he's like super overrated, and I don't think Pirtle's that good relative to the other three. I just think if the Raptors gave up any one of those three, it would be like good deal for both sides.
I think 100% they wouldn't give up OG. There'd be, why would you give up somebody who could potentially turn into Jimmy Butler for Jimmy Butler without the assurance that he's going to re-sign?
So I love OG, but I don't think OG is ever going to be a top 10 player.
I mean, you would have never said that about Jimmy Butler after the first
year. I know, but he's like
career.
A once in a lifetime change between the beginning. Like, there's never been a player that I've watched that I can remember watching in the NBA who is like as unlikely to become a star. Like, I was his biggest fan. And in a zillion years, if you asked me 5 years ago, I would have been like, there's a exactly zero probability of Jimmy being this good. So like Jimmy becoming this good, I don't think means that we can expect the same out of other players who are similar early in their careers.
Yeah, totally. I agree. I mean, I've heard people for the last 8 years call other players the next Kawhi Leonard, where nobody thought that Kawhi Leonard would even sniff an all-star game after his first 2 years in the league. And he became maybe the best player in the league for over.
But that's what I'm saying about OG. Like, I love OG. I'm super high on OG.
But I think, like, there's easily a chance that OG becomes an all-star and that you 100% have OG. He has only played a year in the league. He'll finish a 4-year rookie contract, and you could always get somebody to re-sign that next deal so they at least have him for 6 more years. So if you weren't willing to trade him for Kawhi.
Yeah, but this is their best chance to win a title. If they get Kawhi and Jimmy on the same team, that's like a very legitimate chance to win a title. And like in those 6 years of OG, once they lose Kawhi next summer, they're like not going to get back to being a title contender with higher than like 3% probability.
Yeah, I just think that would be cashing all of the chips in for one season, which maybe that's what they want to do. But the genius of them...
It's not all the chips. They have so many other young players. Like Van Vliet and Siakam are really young. And I think Van Vliet is better than OG, honestly. I think he has more upside.
He's going to have a better game-to-game impact on like every single game for the Raptors next year than OG will. But I think if you look at Van Vliet, Siakam, and OG, OG's the only one of those players that I could see becoming like a multi-time all-star. I think Van Vliet could be like a rich man's JJB, like a really good sixth man that plays incredible in the playoffs. But I don't think, and yeah, I just think like...
I disagree. I think Van Vliet's like... Honestly, Van Vliet's better than like a lot of starting point guards.
I would take Van Vliet over Chris Dunn, but I just think like OG Anunoby could be incredible, and he's only played 6 years.
I found a bigger OG fan than me. Like, I think I love OG, but I like the probability of OG being an all-star to me is like 10%.
Man, I would say we'll have to keep track of this over if we do this for the next couple of years, but I would say 80 to 90% sure he will be an all-star. I mean, he could have easily been a top 5 pick last year had he not torn his ACL in college. And he fell to the Raptors, and you're getting somebody who had, you know, top 5, top 6 talent at an incredible value. What, they get him at the 18th pick? And he just has everything that you could want in a modern NBA player that's able to play multiple positions. And if they're going for, they want to win this year, sure, trade him for Jimmy Butler, and that probably increases your odds at the title. But I thought what was so genius of the way they traded for Kawhi is they didn't mortgage their future, but they also increase their likelihood of winning a title this year.
Right. Well, we just basically are disagreeing about OG, so we should probably move on. I would put it this way. I value Van Vliet and Siakam like equally to OG, and I probably value Van Vliet the most out of the three. So I think we're just disagreeing about a specific guy, not like the overall.
Yeah, I like all those players a lot. I'm a Raptors fan. I don't know if you remember, but all right. So our next segment is we're going to talk about the things that we feel alone on or on an island on going into this next season. So I guess let's go back and forth. I'm going to do my first one first. Yeah, I'm going to no Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. So let you react to that.
I mean, I think like people are underrating the possibility that Hayward's kind of a shell of himself, and also underrating the possibility that the Bucks turn into like a real juggernaut to go with the Raptors, or maybe one of the Sixers and Pacers. I know that's another one of yours. So yeah, I mean, I think that the depth of the East is underrated, so I don't think it's as ridiculous as other people do. But that being said, the Celtics are adding the two best players to a team that made the conference finals last year. So it's definitely bold. And I would not say that I'm going to pick them to go to the conference finals.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever we did our last episode. I think the Bucks should have beat the Celtics in round one last year. And the Sixers just, I have no idea what happened in that second round. They played terribly and lost a couple close games. And I just think it'll be more difficult than people think adding Kyrie and Hayward back into the fold of this young team who now kind of has their own identity. I also think that the Kyrie I don't know, transformation last year was extremely exaggerated. He did play better in a system because he finally had a system than he ever did in Cleveland, but there was a lot of just the one-on-one, his handles are great, yeah, but the selfish Kyrie still on display, and I just think it was exaggerated, and I think the Raptors are going to be really special, and I will keep coming back to this island of LeBron was the best player in the Eastern Conference for 14 years, and there's a huge chance for whoever becomes the best player in the East now to own that conference for a really long time. And I love Kawhi, looking at his poster in my room, but I think Giannis is going to be the best player in the East for the next 10 to 15 years if he stays with the Bucks. So I think it's going to be Raptors.
I got to say that I've been watching Bucks Bulls while doing this podcast, and the Bucks are just like really beating the heck out of the Bulls, and they look like the Budenholzer ball movement looks like it's in midseason form already in like game two of the preseason or game one or whatever.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be Bucks and Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's not my island. My island is going to be that the Celtics don't make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, when I could see multiple teams taking them out. I could see the Pacers or the Sixers taking them out along with the other two teams that I mentioned. What's your first island?
I just wrote down a bunch of like mini islands, so I'm trying to pick between them right now. I guess you put Philly finishing fifth in the East. I also put that down, so I'm not going to take that one away from you. I'm going to go with one of these two teams will make the playoffs and one of the next two teams will miss the playoffs. The two that I think one of the two, maybe both, will make it is Dallas and Memphis. I think Memphis like really, really took losing intentionally seriously last year after Conley went down with the Achilles, but like made the playoffs for a bunch of years in a row before that. And they still have Conley and Gasol, and they're not that old. And also Jaren Jackson Jr. I think is like really ready to make an impact as a rookie. Plus they added some wings, which has always been one of their, I'm not remembering other than Kyle Anderson, which wings they added, but I know they added some wings, which has always been one of their team issues. But I'm even more in on Dallas. I think Luka is going to be rookie of the year. I think they're going to be ready. They have DeAndre now. Dallas had actually a point differential that was like pretty close to zero for a lot of last year while they were losing a lot. And so they were kind of like pretty unlucky team in terms of their record, and then like super intentionally tanked at the end.
Yeah, Dallas's MO from what I watched of them last year was they would a lot of times be in the game or close in the fourth quarter, and then they would take all of their good players out and put like the really young guys in the fourth, and then they would obviously lose the game. So I mean, it was the definition of tanking.
So I think one of those two teams is going to make the playoffs, and then I think one of the Spurs and Lakers missed the playoffs. I think the Spurs pulled an incredible magic trick last season with Pop and the roster they had, and I guess I don't think their roster has improved as much as other people do, because I don't think DeMar's that good. I know he's a star in a lot of like obvious ways, but I think he's like not a star in a lot of less obvious ways. And just it's going to be really hard for them to construct lineups that have enough shooting for the modern NBA. And this starting lineup they trotted out in their first, I know Pop's going to switch the starting lineup around a bunch probably, but the one they trotted out in their first game of DeJounte, DeMar, Rudy, Aldridge, and who am I forgetting? Who's the center? Okay, whatever. The starting lineup they trotted out there, I think, is going to have a hard time making the playoffs in the West just based on shooting. And it's going to be hard for them to like mix in the bench guys and the starters enough that the shooters and the non-shooters are out there together. So I'm a little worried about them.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about their team is they do the Spurs do have shooting, but it's going to be hard. How do you like integrate the shooters into the lineups? Because Bertans, Patty Mills, Bellinelli, I mean, Rudy Gay.
Bryn,
yeah, has Love improved Bryn. From three. But yeah, I don't know how they'll get them integrated into the lineup. And unless LaMarcus, DeMar, or LaMarcus is a good 3-point shooter, but unless DeMar.
He's an okay 3-point shooter. He's like low to mid 30s.
Well, I mean, he like would take like one attempt or two attempts a game last year. And I think last year, had Kawhi been healthy, he would have taken a lot more, because that's what they were really gearing the offense towards last season before Kawhi sabotaged our entire franchise. But
anyway, for the second part of my island, we've talked ad nauseum about the Lakers. I'm starting to believe a little bit more in their offense, having watched a few minutes in one of their preseason games, because I think they were doing a remarkable Luke Walton was doing a remarkable job mixing the shooters and the non-shooters, which was the biggest thing I was concerned about for them. But in order to make the playoffs, LeBron's going to have to play like 3 years ago level defense instead of last year level defense. And I'm not sure he's going to do. And for 82 games against a way tougher schedule, because the West has way more depth than the East. And I don't know. He's 34. So we'll see. So that's my island. One of those two teams will make the playoffs. One of those two teams will miss the playoffs. And why don't we do like one more island each?
By the way, the Spurs shot 40% from three in their first preseason game. So better hold your horses.
On how many attempts? Also, like preseason game, the starters are going to play less, right? And it's like the starters where all the non-shooters lurk.
Highly efficient. My last island.
I love the Spurs. I'm not rooting for them to miss the playoffs, to be clear. Do not want to ruin my relationship with A, my podcast buddy, and B, our most diehard listener, who's also on my dissertation committee.
My last island, and this is kind of hard to believe, but this is more of my Skip Bayless take, is that no former MVPs will finish in the top five in MVP voting. So here's, in no particular order, who I think will finish in the top five.
Giannis,
Anthony Davis, Kawhi, Karl-Anthony Towns, and...
Oh, there's no way he finishes top five. Hey, the Timberwolves are going to win like 34 games.
Hey, this is my island. You can't sail your boat over here.
I was just actually reinforcing your point by reinforcing what an island it was.
And then... I don't know who my fifth person would be. That's why it was like, when I started to say it earlier, I was like, maybe I don't believe this, but I'll think of my fifth one in a little bit. So Kyrie, there we go. Even though
Oladipo.
So
I think Oladipo could totally finish top five in MVP voting. He almost did last year.
He's a good candidate too. It would depend on where they finished in the East for sure. But yeah.
I think that's pretty reasonable, actually, that island. Except that there's no way. Wait, do you think the Timberwolves make the playoffs? Assuming that, like, I guess it depends, obviously, what they get back for Butler. But, like, assuming it's one of the trades that's, like, kind of vaguely like what's been reported, do you have them in the playoffs?
Yeah, obviously, because I have Karl-Anthony Towns in the top five in MVP voting. But, no, I don't know. I think I'm, like, trying to talk myself into maybe they have, like, an Anthony Davis... Maybe he has like an Anthony Davis last season type year, where it's like maybe Jimmy Butler was like their version of DeMarcus Cousins, and they're somehow able to like play, you know.
So a key difference in my view is that we saw the Timberwolves play a third of the season without Jimmy Butler, and I'm not seeing Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis comparison. The main difference is just that Anthony Davis is also one of the best players in the NBA on defense. And also, I think Anthony Davis can create for himself a lot more on offense, whereas I feel like Towns is still often reliant on the assisted basket, efficient as he is. Anyway, I think the Timberwolves win roughly at their, maybe a little bit better because they got rid of Crawford, who's terrible, and that's 20 minutes of non-disaster per game this year. But I think they win like roughly at their non-Jimmy clip last year, which was like a 34 win pace. So I think they win like 36 or something. Although I guess it depends who they get back for Jimmy, and we don't know yet. All right, let's do my last island. I think it's a pretty crazy one. The truth of this island is that I think it's like a 50-50, but to make it a full island, I'm just going to go ahead and take the 100. I think the NBA champion is from the Eastern Conference this year. Really, what I think is that it's a 50-50 chance between the East and the West, but we're doing islands. And my reasoning for that is as follows. Basically, I think the lack of wing depth on Houston and Golden State are a problem against teams with infinite wing depth, in particular Toronto, Boston, and possibly Milwaukee if they get that deep. I think this McCaw situation is underrated and how much it's going to hurt the Warriors, because I'm not convinced that Iguodala can stay healthy through like a really intense playoff run at age whatever age he is. And basically, perimeter players, they have their core five, their Hamptons five, whatever you want to call them. And then they have Quinn Cook and Sean Livingston, who doesn't shoot threes. And so he can guard perimeter players, but he doesn't stretch the floor. And the Warriors really, they're dominant when they don't play a center. And they just literally don't have enough bodies on their team to not play a center for even like half the game. And so I think that's like a real problem. And then, you know, the Rockets lost all kinds of wing depth all over the place in Bamute and Ariza. And then Carmelo Anthony, I think, was like a minus 10 win guy on the Thunder last year. My read of like the data with him in and out of the lineup, and just like his defense and inefficient. He's terrible at ISOs at this point in his career. And that's like all he did on the Thunder. So unless Carmelo like really, really Olympic mellows or something, I think the Rockets take a step back. I think the Warriors lack wing depth, and these Raptors, Celtics, you know, Bucks type teams can just throw an endless line of switch everything. Like they have like 10 wings on their roster and the Warriors have like four. And so I think that the Warriors can't really play their game.
I agree.
It's an island.
Do I have permission to buy some real estate on that island with you?
Sure.
So I'll let you go. But when we started this podcast, you know, shortly after the finals ended, I think both you and I thought like, okay, last season was actually like a terrible season in a lot of ways for the Warriors, both mentally and physically. And they still ended up winning the championship, you know, despite Houston being historic. And I kind of came away from the Warriors winning their second Kevin Durant title, third total title, thinking like next year's Warriors is going to be like the unstoppable version that we saw, you know, in snippets in Durant's first year there. And now I've started to, you know, trend backwards. And I actually think that they could be the worst parts of what we saw them as last year for more of the season, because I think not only do you have the slog of them potentially trying to make, I believe, their fifth finals in a row, and they're try to three-peat, which only very historic teams have done. They also are going to have the DeMarcus Cousins integration and the Kevin Durant free agency looming over their team the entire season. And I just think that this could be the end of the Warriors. And I think it could kind of go up, not in flames, but similar to how they looked in those first couple games or the middle of the series against Houston in the Western Conference Finals, where you're looking at them and you're looking at the players on the court and you're like, what is happening? Why aren't the Warriors the Warriors anymore? And I just think paired against the wrong team, whether it be the Raptors, maybe not really, can't really buy into the Bucks, but the Raptors, the Celtics, or even the Lakers, if the Lakers young guys do develop, I think I do not see the Warriors winning the championship this year. And last year, I would have like bet my entire life and everything I owned on the fact that they would have won. And I don't see it this year. I think there's too many factors weighing against them. And I think a lot of other teams that match up well with them have gotten better. So I actually...
All right, we can save some of those for the preview podcast too.
I'm going to go one more island. This isn't really an island, but the Lakers will be the Western Conference Finals representative in the finals. So,
oh wow.
I think we get Lakers in Toronto.
Let's handle that next week.
All right. Yeah, next week we'll do our awards previews for the season and kind of our season preview in general. So thanks for bearing with us. Hope the sound quality was okay tonight, but you can follow us on Twitter at Takes the Game, and you know our Twitter handles by now. So, you got anything else, man?
No, I'm good. See you, Taylor.
All right, peace.